pulling back the curtain of silence
and learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen, Brown-Eyed Activism.
Healing at the intersections. So I really wanted to talk about work, mostly because, let's face it, like, we all do it. Mm-hmm. Many of us can't escape it. We've done it at some point. Chances are we're going to do it till we die.
Oh.
Yeah, it got morbid real quick.
Dark.
But, you know, work, specifically paid work, comprises, honestly, more time out of our lives than actually spending time with our family or significant others, which is kind of morbid.
Yikes.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
And it's inextricably linked to capitalism.
Yeah.
And I've had so many conversations in the past, like, three-ish years about work and jobs and careers, mainly because at this point in my life, I'm at this place where I'm no longer thinking about the next hoop of education to jump through. And I'm thinking more about, what am I trying to create? Like, what am I trying to do for myself? What opportunities do I want to create for myself? And yeah, I've been in the position to have the privilege to seek a job that can hopefully become a career, you know, which is not the case for so many of us. And so, you know, girls got to eat. We engage in paid work out of necessity, out of survival, you know. So I understand that even having a conversation on meaningful work is a hell of a fucking privilege. And it's one that I realize not everyone is afforded. So I just want to start with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
We work hard to provide for ourselves, our families, our friends. We work to maintain shelter and housing, food, basic necessities. We work to sustain our hobbies and the passions that perhaps don't pay, like this podcast. And for so many of us, you know, getting to a place where we survive is all that we can really think of. And so I just want to honor that. On our podcast, we're so committed to centering the experiences of Black and Indigenous people of color, specifically women of color, and those who identify, you know, outside of the gender binary as well. So this episode is no different, and it's important to note that when we're talking about fulfilling work and work in general, we're always talking about people of color, you know,
yeah.
In case you thought otherwise.
Always.
You know, our experiences in workplaces, our career journeys, all fall within systems of capitalism and labor, and this is really unique for us. For so many of us, as we talk about things like fulfilling work, we think that this is a white people thing.
Mm.
And I'm here to say that I don't think it always is. So, you know, for myself as a child of Kenyan immigrants, this has always been something that I've struggled with. I've seen my parents, mostly my mom, specifically my mom, toil and work her ass off. And so this idea that work can be enjoyable or fulfilling has for so long been a myth that I'm hoping that we can kind of dispel. Lala, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm a child of an immigrant. Like, my dad immigrated from India, but class plays into this in a huge way because he came from a very class-privileged family. So he did go for meaningful over practical.
Gotcha.
He's a philosopher.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Is he like a professor?
Yeah.
What?
He is, yeah. And he's...
Did not know that at all.
Yeah. And he does really well now. Like, he's very... very successful in his field now, but he definitely struggled financially for a long time. But I think opting into financial struggle is very different when
totally.
You come from privilege, right?
Yes.
And you decide to opt for struggle in order to go for the meaningful thing, but
yes.
That's from a place of choice.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, interestingly, I was mostly raised by the white side of my family, and the messages that I got were so different than what you got, it sounds like. So my mom and her sister, they were allowed to study whatever they wanted at university because the idea was that it didn't matter because they would marry men who would be the providers and that they would stay home with their kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So my mom studied philosophy, my aunt studied sociology.
Gotcha.
They both ended up working outside of the home, but meanwhile my uncles had to do something practical, so they both became engineers.
Right.
And I feel like I got similar messaging, so I was always told I should just study whatever I like, and I definitely got the message that the most important thing in my life would B, to get married and have kids.
Wow.
Which, you know, surprise.
Here we are. Couldn't
have turned out to be more wrong.
You thought, Mom.
I think she's finally given up. I think she finally realizes that I'm never going to have children. Mm-hmm. But class is still really loud in this story, right? Because, I mean, the idea that you can go to post-secondary and it doesn't matter if you come out with anything practical on the other side, right? Like, my family's not wealthy, but it's a very decidedly middle-class plus attitude.
That's such a different experience, because for me, I had parents who were very much like, you need to go and pick something that's practical that you can go and get a job with.
Yeah.
Because my mom, her father was incredibly, he was an awful human being in so many respects. But one of the things that he instilled in her was take care of yourself, like get your paper before you like meet a man. Don't expect anyone to take care of you. Be independent. And so she really instilled that into us. She did nursing. After being a physiotherapist in her homeland of Kenya, she came here and she couldn't practice physiotherapy because ain't that about a bitch, and worked from like the ground up, you know, was like cleaning people's houses, and then she became a care aide, then she was she just did all the things.
Yeah.
And so for seeing that and understanding her experiences, I always got the impression that like work wasn't necessarily your heart singing. Work was the thing you did to provide and put food on the table, you know? And like I mentioned, I probably talked about work more over the past 3 years than I have in my entire life, which isn't surprising because I'm 27. So really, I've just been beginning my work journey. But this discussion has been bubbling and percolating for a while. And I've been thinking mostly about what it's meant to go and do, you know, post-secondary, do all the school, jump through all the hoops, tick all the boxes, achieve the things, get the job, and come to the realization that there's so much danger that exists and inherent harm waiting for us when we tie our sense of worthiness and ourselves to our jobs. And I've been thinking about that for a bit of time now, and I'm not sure what's going on in my natal chart. Probably probably you know more than I do. And we talked about this actually when you first did my natal my chart reading in 2017, I think. And it really set on fire these kinds of conversations that I'm having with myself now.
Right.
But how are you feeling diving into this topic of work?
Yeah, there's so much here for me. And it's funny, like when you just said the danger that exists for us, that hits hard.
Yeah.
And speaking of natal charts, I actually had an astrology reading like a week or two ago from Alice Barkley Cat, who's the best. And they were looking at something in my chart and asked where I've experienced institutional trauma. And I was like, everywhere. Wow. And like work. And honestly, especially the more professional jobs and environments, there has been so much harm. And that has a lot to do with why I'm an entrepreneur now and also working in the service industry. So yes, there is a lot for
us to
talk about.
There's so many layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as women of color, we spend a lot of time sharing our anecdotes about our work, our coworkers, how our days go. I wonder, though, if we spend time in reflection about how work makes us feel, what we want from our jobs. And I think there's this surgence of so many women of color who I'm meeting in the community that have been meditating on this conversation and exploring what work means for them.
Yeah.
And it's through these conversations that I've been having that I've been able to kind of understand the distinctions between truths and falsities about working that I'd like to share. Because I think the truths are important because they help guide us and connect us to a deeper sense of what actually matters, which is, you know, us.
Yes.
And what doesn't matter. And then knowing that falsities are important because they help us identify when harmful systems of oppression are seeping into the things we take at face value and that taint our relationships with ourselves, with our work, with our bodies, with each other.
Right.
So a couple of truths that I believe is, number one, we are more than our jobs.
Yes.
Number two, we are more than how productive we are.
It's a big one.
It's very weighty. And number three, we are worthy of respect no matter what we do for work.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of those falsities, some of them false truths we think are for real, but they're not. If you want something, you must endure pain to get there. To be successful, you aren't supposed to enjoy the journey, and joy in work is not a thing. I think we learn a lot about what it means to work from the outside world because of how we're treated at work. But for so many of us, our first teachers are really our family members, adults in our lives, our parents. And so if our parents have disordered relationships with their jobs, plural, if they worked nonstop because they were struggling to survive and provide, we learn, or at least, you know, I've learned that Work isn't something that you get to enjoy. My dad was a hella deadbeat dude. And my mom continues to work her ass off. She's kind of doing the immigrant dream kind of thing. But I've started to think about what it's meant to grow up as a child of immigrants and understand the difference between work and passion.
Right. So did your dad not work?
My dad worked, but he worked. He was like the kind of person who didn't enjoy working for other people.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he wanted to do, like, entrepreneurship was something that he really wanted, but it wasn't something that came naturally to him.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, he was very disconnected from the choices that he made work-wise and how it impacted our family. Right. And so my mother was the person who picked up a lot of the slack because she had, you know, a unionized job that was paying benefits, that was, like, very stable, and she chose that route because she knew she had to provide for her kids. My dad felt like he had the ability to go off and do the more entrepreneurial things, even though we weren't reaping the rewards as a family.
Right. So pursue his dream because she was bankrolling it, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. And so for me, it always kind of got, I always got the impression that things like entrepreneurship weren't for us. We should just have the job where you have the boss and people tell you what to do. And that was kind of my understanding as a kid, I think.
Right.
That there's so much risk inherent, obviously, with going out on your own and having your own thing.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later because I want to know more about your journey with being an entrepreneur and having your own business.
Yeah.
So
it's been a journey.
It's been a journey. And I guess I'm curious because when I think about work, or when I've thought about work in the past, especially learning from my parents, struggle is the word that comes to mind.
Right.
You know, like I mentioned, my mother still works her ass off as a single parent living in Vancouver. So many of us feel and actually are tied to this struggle because our struggles are fucking real. We have responsibilities, debts, obligations, dependents, and actual systemic structural things that are so much bigger than us that harm us with insights of productivity and working and paid work.
Yeah.
You know, living paycheck to paycheck is the reality for most of us. There was this recent poll from 2018 that revealed that half of British Columbians live paycheck to paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think 20% are only able to actually save more than $2,000 within a year.
Yeah.
Which is frightening, you know?
And crushing student debt and
absolutely
rent and living in Vancouver.
And all of that begs the question, are we going to be struggling forever? Like, is this just
feels like it?
It does
sometimes.
It really does. And then I think from like a systemic level, we know that power structures and structural oppression follow us into our jobs, right? Like, we're not protected from them at work.
No, not even a little bit.
No, not at all.
For some of us, that's where we experience, where we bump up against those power structures the most.
Yeah. What's been your experience as a woman of color working?
Oh, God. So I guess it's meant trying to survive in spaces that were never meant for me, right? Like,
yeah.
It's having to stay silent about all the things that make me sick. It's been getting exploited, like not being paid what I deserve. It's been tokenizing, like, you know, one supposedly anti-oppressive organization that I worked for. I know they felt that it looked good to hire a queer woman of color who was a survivor of sexual violence like myself, but they had absolutely no interest in operating in a way that wasn't actively harmful to me as a queer woman of color who is a survivor of sexual violence, right? So that's not valuing me and my identities. That's tokenizing.
Totally,
right?
Yeah.
And then working in the service industry, there's like so much racism and sexism from like all directions.
Yes, absolutely.
So not good is what my experience is of working
in
the world as a woman of color. Yeah. What's it been like for you?
I've always felt like the only one, usually the only black person, usually or the only black woman or the only black person like in the entire organization. I'm pretty fresh to career work.
Right.
I grew up working at the mall and then working at a private member only club, like a sports club. There was this very strong sense of tokenizing that happened. I felt like this exotic other all the time.
Constantly every direction. I'm guessing like customers, coworkers, bosses. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. It's like people who I was serving would ask me questions about where I was from and tell me that I was so unique in my beauty. And then I would go into like back of house and people would be like, "Sup girl, what's going on, homie?" Da, 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 da. Mm. And it was just like from every angle, it kind of just felt like I was so aware of my blackness.
Yeah.
And then the same experience kind of happened when I was, like, I did my undergrad, and then I went and did my master's, and then my master's was in public administration, and so what it required was to do work co-ops and, like, work placements within government. And so one of them was working in Ottawa, working in Hull, which is right in Quebec, like, on the border of Quebec and Ottawa. And, yeah, I was in that space where I felt, like, so othered, because I had a nose ring and a shaved head, and we were working really closely with things that were going to cabinet, so everyone was very official and everyone was doing, like, the very official looking thing, and I would always feel like I just didn't belong. And it would always be so relieving to see a Black person in an elevator, even though they were speaking French and I didn't know what the fuck they were saying.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like, ugh. Not great,
yeah,
as well. Yeah. You know. And yeah, like, so for so many of us, our workplaces are sites of oppression. You know, people may still feel like they have the same access to your body inside your job as they do outside your job. We experience, as women of color, just tremendous expectations to carry this burden of doing emotional labor for others. Mm. We experience both hypervisibility as being the only woman of color, and then at the same time, invisibility. When you're literally working in a sea of whiteness, and when you're singled out, it's usually performative or tokenistic.
Yeah.
Right? And so we experience things like the wage pay gap. I mean,
so real.
It's so real. As women of color, I think there's so much conversation around women getting paid equal to men. But when you really dial down and look at the numbers even further, you can see the disparities between women of color and white men, women of color, and white women. Say,
gender is a racial category.
Oh, you can't gender say that shit enough. Yeah, and we experience, you know, the presumption of being less competent or less qualified, despite many of us being more educated. Yeah. Lean in Canada issued some report that said that women of color are actually amongst some of the most educated demographics, but yet we're not seeing that translate into being promoted at equal rates to our white peers, for example.
Yeah.
So much of the conversation on women in work has focused on white women's experiences.
Like, that website is called Lean in Canada.
What? And, you know, like, the Lean In campaign was the product of this white woman named Sheryl Sandberg, who's a business person in her own right. And it focuses on, like, seizing opportunities without hesitation, being assertive, going for leadership roles, not going for the follower position. But, like, I don't know, when you hear Leaning In, what does that make you feel like?
It's just some white woman bullshit. I mean, I'm not even convinced this works for white women. Maybe, like, the most privileged white women who can throw money at any problem, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm just not convinced this works for anyone. It's certainly, I know that has nothing to do with us.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, Leaning In doesn't work for us. It's sort of like the girl power of the workplace. Yeah, like,
it
you
is. Know, it's it like, totally is.
Well, it's made by white women for white women. And so many of us walk through the doors with the assumption that, you know, as a Black woman, for myself, for example, like, if I disagree or if I'm being firm in my opinion, I'm being aggressive.
Or if you just, like, exist, or right? If I don't have to say anything. Like, I literally breathe and people are like, oh.
Like, that's an attitude that you're copying. Seriously. Yeah. Or that, like, you know, when we express our ideas, we're not team players. So this idea of just, like, leaning in as the salve or the balm for experiencing disproportionate rates of being held back, essentially.
Yeah. Or if our ideas are even, they're either not listened to or they're stolen or they're dismissed. Did you watch the episode of State of the Culture where, so Scotty Beam was saying something amazing, as she always does.
Yeah.
And then Remy Ma started talking. And then Joe interrupted Remy and was like, oh, wait, Remy, I just want to say. And then he said, like, the exact thing Scotty had just said. I'm like, you just interrupted one woman to say
quote,
the exact,
to quote another woman to say
the exact, like, quote that she just, yeah, said, because you weren't listening to her.
Yes.
And so you didn't realize that she just said that, like, that in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's like, how are we supposed to get ahead when no one, and, like, this idea of just, like, seizing opportunities is kind of funny, because it's like, how are we supposed to seize opportunities if they're never even thrown at us to begin with? Like, what opportunities are we even talking about? What crumbs? And so, like, other experiences that I've witnessed myself and many women of color may be familiar with is gatekeeping,
right?
Where it's like there's this person who has the ability to influence your career or your trajectory of your career or something that requires them to like let you through the doors, and you need this person, you know.
I'm gonna have a panic attack just thinking about
the
times I've been in those situations with. I did have like in particular two white women mentors in my time who were lovely, but the vast majority of my experiences with white women and those types of girls, I just almost have a panic attack thinking about it, because the amount that I have to swallow and be silent about and like perform in order to like not get onto their bad side, it's like, it's so violent and
it
just
is
so harmful. Yeah.
And when you can see all the things playing out in real time, but you recognize that you don't have the capacity to say what you need to say or to like assert yourself in the ways that you need to make yourself feel safe at work.
Right. Because again, it's like it's not like you have all these opportunities, right? So you feel like you have to play this game. It feels like there's no other way around it.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah. And then there's like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but gatekeeping by white people is one thing. White women in your experience, but then like gatekeeping that happens by other people of color or women of color, where it's like, you know, there can only be one, and it's like this, you're trying kind of like playing into pick me politics where you're like, I see you as a threat because we're both the same color and only one of us can survive. Get off the fucking island, you're getting voted off, like that type of shit. And that is, to me, is like, so that's some shit, because you're like, I want to root for both of us. I want both of us to succeed. And it's difficult when you're in situations like that. And my mind always goes to like, where is this person's head at when they're seeing me as their competition as opposed to like me as their ally? Because I'm like, I'll be there for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you ever had that experience?
I actually haven't. I've been lucky, I guess. I mean, I've been unlucky in the sense that I haven't really had a ton of coworkers that have been women of color.
Right.
But in terms of having women of color in a position of authority over me, I don't think I've ever had that at all. And then so far, my experience with other women of color therapists has been very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely everyone wanting to like throw opportunities to each other because it's so hard out there. So yeah, I have. Have you experienced that?
I've seen it play out not related to me.
Okay.
And I've been able to talk to people who were like, yo, this person straight up doesn't like me because I'm the other Indian person in the room, and they're an Indian woman and they just don't like me.
Yikes.
For whatever reason. It hasn't happened in my, but like, I mean, that's more of a testament to the fact that I've never had like,
same as me. Yeah.
I've never had a coworker or a superior who was of color or a black woman. Like my current boss is a racialized woman, and it's a very different kind of relationship than what I'm describing here. But yeah, I've never been in that situation because I never worked with black people before.
Yeah.
Actually though, have I worked with black people before? Maybe like way back when I was 19.
Yeah.
But like that's it. That's all.
It is sad when you think about it, just never having a person in a position of authority that's a woman of color. It took until my last year of undergrad before I even had a teacher or professor who is a woman of color.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple of women of color that I had as professors in undergrad, but then by the time I went to my master's, none except for my master's supervisor. And I found like,
that's amazing.
I was like, you like,
yeah,
I need you to be the person to like help me.
Yeah, there were no women of color in the faculty where I did grad school.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
Ain't that about a bitch.
Yeah.
And so all of this is to say, if you have a fucked up relationship with work, if your experience, you know, with work has only ever included systemic oppression on the side, or if you just had like an okay job experience for these reasons that we've listed and so many more, you're not alone, you know. Mm-hmm. Given all of this harm that can occur while we participate in capitalism, working our asses off, I'm so compelled to think of and meditate on and be hopeful of, like, what can it mean to find joy in work?
Mm-hmm.
Can that even exist? Can our work as a woman of color be meaningful? Can it be enjoyable? Can it be safe? Like, can it be energizing? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I believe it can. It can be. I think it's so rare for us, though.
Yeah.
We just talked about how we haven't had women of color in positions of authority as, you know, superiors, bosses, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does that teach us? Right.
About we, like, how can
about
we
where we
belong,
but what's possible for us.
Absolutely.
Right. Like,
yeah,
if we never get to see ourselves ascending, you know, into these positions, then why would we ever be able to imagine that for ourselves?
Totally. Yeah. And like for me, I've never felt just unwanted or straight up unwelcome in my workplaces. I felt a deep sense of unbelonging simply because, yeah, there's like no other Black people in my workplace.
Yeah.
And what this means for so many of us is that we're unable to bring our full, complete, whole Black and brown selves to our jobs.
100%.
Right?
Yes.
Have you had that experience where you had to...
Oh, yeah. That's like every job that I've ever had.
Yeah.
So being an entrepreneur, that's where I've been able to finally experience showing up and experiencing work as joyful, energizing, fulfilling, being my entire self, all of those things.
Right.
But every job I've ever had, absolutely. I can't bring my whole self. I have to censor everything. I have to find the parts of myself that might be acceptable in this circumstance and like play that role for people.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is just this sense of feeling like you have to perform.
Yeah.
Right? You have 100%. To turn on, and people talk about it as their customer service voice or whatever it might be, which I totally have.
Higher.
I definitely have that.
Yeah.
But I think more to the point, it's not just about changing your voice. It's about being able to come to the table as your full self with all the properties that entails as a person of color, as a queer person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know very many folks who can come to work as their full whole selves without fear of folks thinking that they're incompetent, folks thinking that they are
unprofessional,
you know,
aggressive, hostile.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this idea of I believe that workplaces are sites of growth perhaps and learning. Of course, there's sites of oppression as well. Go ahead.
And I think that it's interesting because we talk so much about we can't show up and say what we think because what we're seen as being hostile or aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's terrifying about that to me is that anger is something that happens, or like boundary setting is something that happens when harm is occurring. And so the fact that anytime we try to set a boundary, even the boundary of this is my opinion, separate from what your opinion is.
Yeah.
We are so punished for it,
mm-hmm.
right? And that is what is so terrifying, because if we're not allowed to set any boundary, including just the boundary of this is what I think or this is what I feel,
right,
we are in so much danger. Like, no wonder so much harm happens for us. No wonder so many of us have to burn out, or we have to go on stress leave, or we're so miserable, or we have these high rates of health issues or whatever, right?
Totally. Yeah, there's this idea of the woman of color coming into a nonprofit. There's like a bunch of different stages, essentially. Mm. Like, woman of color enters the nonprofit. Nonprofit welcomes her because she is this beacon of hope of things yet to come, and she has all these ideas, and she's so incredibly astute in her political and, you know,
mm-hmm.
vision, let's say. And then a woman of color starts to get comfortable in the organization, and she begins to understand how things work. Woman of color starts to ask questions, suggest, recommend, prod, push.
I see where this is going.
Right? Organization somehow now sees woman of color as threat because it's disrupting the status quo. Her presence is now no longer as welcome. She is a bully. She is too loud. She is too opinionated. She is, like I said, not a team player. And it essentially delineates this journey from woman of color entering nonprofit to woman of color exiting nonprofit.
Yep.
And I think that's kind of what you're speaking of, is like, I feel as though so many sites of work were never made with the intention of us faring very well in them. And so if we know that as truth, then we walk into them knowing, like, this is what I have to do to stay put here. This is what I have to give up in order for me to assimilate.
Yeah. And
you know,
for me, it made me so unwell. Like, being in that kind of environment that is so white, that everything about it, right, is like created by white standards and operates on white rules. And, you know, doesn't want to be challenged on that in a real way. And especially the anti-oppressive ones, because those are the ones that are gaslighting the fuck out of you.
Oh, man.
They're saying one thing and they're doing the exact fucking opposite.
Totally.
And that is where you get really sick in my experience.
Yeah. And I think I haven't had that experience solely because I've always worked in government organizations or working in service industry where there's such a different expectation that I have of the place of work. When you're working in a place like a nonprofit where you hope you share the same values,
you for think example, you can show up as yourself, and then you get more harm because you showed up more.
Totally.
You're not as protective. Or as in the service industry, I have different expectations of it. It's easier because I'm not expecting like a safe environment or whatever, and I go in intentionally already like channeling certain parts of myself. I also find that there's a certain kind of, at least for me, freedom in the fact that you're on your feet. You can kind of walk away from a lot of things.
Right.
It isn't as like buttoned up as an environment, so it's like a little bit for me easier to just let it go, and there's a little bit more
like leeway that you have, or like ability
in a certain way. It's weird that in some ways I have, like in so many ways you have less freedom at those jobs. Like, it's not like you can just go for coffee or just leave on your lunch break whenever you feel like it.
Right.
That's not a thing that happens in the service industry.
Right, of course not.
But when something kind of fucked up is happening with coworkers, I can walk away because it's like, oh, I gotta go to my table. Or
there's many places where you can kind of redirect yourself into.
Exactly.
As we're having this conversation about what it means to have influence over your own self at work, given the fact that so many of us lack the power to influence job hires or strategic human resources or whatever have you in the places that we work, I think it's really important for us to begin to get familiar with the influence and power that we do have, which is essentially just like over ourselves, which fucking, I want to say this, like, most of the times in our podcast we'll do like fuck shit and then like what can we do, and so like thinking about like what can we do, I really struggled in thinking about it because so much of it is so focused on self when we know for a fact that it's not just us, like
and so I
think I just want to preface that as so many of us don't have the structural power to go and hire more people of color in our workplaces or to institute new ways of how we interact with each other in workplaces that are less oppressive. Some of us do, and if we do have that capacity, let's do something with that. But I'm speaking to like the yous and I's that are not there. And so I think for myself, you know, I've noticed some shifts in my own thinking. One thing has been recognizing that there is this pressure to perform and perfect productivity that so many of us feel is inescapable. And for myself, I recognize that productivity and that as the barometer for who you are as a person, like if that's like, I'm just like always, I just get all this shit done. I'm like always super productive. I don't waste any time. In my mind, I think tying your self-worth to how productive you are is a disease that robs us of our joy.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about how ableist it is, right?
Yeah.
Because it's very much tied to being able-bodied, to not having any kind of physical or mental.
Or like having neurotypical and being able to like, you know,
Exactly. Which is very tied to being somebody with a lot of power and privilege in the world because oppression is very bad for your health.
Yes.
Right? Oh, God. Like these are the only people that are worthy. So isn't it interesting that we have this huge cultural idea that essentially says that the most powerful and privileged in our society are the most worthy, right?
Absolutely. Because, yes, there's so much inherent harm in tying your productivity to work because it is an ableist concept and notion to begin with. And then as well, it is something, like I mentioned, that robs us of our joy, our ability to enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah.
And I think
to rest and recharge.
To rest and recharge.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot has been this idea that surely our lives are worth and valued more than the job that we did the 9-to-5.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely.
And I don't know how to say that without coming across as like, like trying to be like this hippy-dippy. But I know for a fact for myself, like I can go work an entire week and forget all the things I did that entire week because it's not meaning-making for me. I don't feel a sense of connectedness to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And again, I recognize, and I keep on coming back to this, is like I recognize that there's a lot of privilege to have these very philosophical conversations. But I also want to argue that I think we're all entitled to thinking about our lives as inherently worthy and worthy of joy and worthy of fulfillment no matter where we are.
Yeah, and I think that saying that we're worth more than whatever our job is, I think that's inherently tied to social justice.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think it is, again, capitalism, ableism, classism, all kinds of systems of oppression that want us to tie our worth to what our job is.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking too about The Uses of the Erotic by Audre Lorde. Like you said, you might have to go to a job that it just pays the bills. And that might not be the thing that gives you that deep sense of pleasure and rightness and connectedness to the universe, right? And I think it's really important to recognize that, especially for people that don't have access to jobs that give them that feeling, because that feeling, you know, that erotic feeling, that is part of our birthright.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm getting. That's exactly what I'm getting at, actually, is that a sense of deep connectedness to what we're doing with our bodies, with our minds, is something that we inherently deserve the right to experience and the right to pursue and the right to like dabble in. I don't think that's just relegated to like the white person, the white privileged person. And I want to disrupt that, because I think so many of us will continue to do things because we feel like we have to do these things. We have to be, we cannot possibly be a person that enjoys what we're doing. And I think we talk about this sometimes, believing something and then that being something that can guide you towards what you actually want.
Yes.
And I think for so many of us, that conversation is oftentimes like a white person conversation where it's like, if you just manifest it, then it's going to come true. But what I'm really thinking about is, if you set your eyes on something and you have this vision of what you want, or if you have a sense of alignment, or you have this knowledge of what that power of the erotic is, or you have that knowledge of self and about where you want to go, that is inherently for all of us, for all of us.
Yeah. And I think that when we allow ourselves to be guided by those feelings and those forces, sometimes for those of us who don't have infinite privilege, something gets in the way. Something does get in the way. These barriers come up.
Always, yeah.
But then I think if you find that, if you have that feeling of alignment where like you know that this is the place that you're supposed to be going and, you know, systemic racism is getting in your way, for example, it's just so important to know that that is unnatural and that that has nothing to do with you or your worthiness.
Yes.
I think for myself, I experienced so much institutional trauma, like so much systemic racism and ableism as well, that made it impossible for me to stay in those spaces or go down that path.
Right.
And so then for me, I've been building this career that's actually all about that, that's about healing on a personal level and doing that collective liberation work.
Yeah.
And it's like I had to realize, you know, these white spaces, whatever, that's never going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go somewhere else. You got to do something else.
Totally. I want to talk a little bit, a lot more about your experiences, because I think we're at such different places in our journeys work-wise.
Yeah.
It seems like you are doing work that is fulfilling to you, that's giving you that alignment. I feel for myself, I've talked to you about this, that this, there's this phenomenon I think that a lot of people of color, women of color experience, this fear and loathing or of like job seeking or exploration or entrepreneurship. And I'm not trying to say that women of color aren't doing those things despite those very strong feelings, but I'm curious for you, like, what has been your experience, and can you speak a little bit more to like that obstacle of like feeling like, yo, entrepreneurship, is this really for me? And like, is this supposed to be some white people shit? Like,
It's honestly, it's been so hard, and it took me over a year just to get past the total overwhelm of it. And I'm like a year and a half in, like, so it's a lot of it has just been terror and overwhelm and total imposter syndrome and total like, how should I be here? I don't think I should be here. I don't know if I can do this. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. All those kinds of things.
Right.
And especially too, like not seeing very many people at all who look like me in my field and not seeing a lot of people who look like me as entrepreneurs. So it's hard to find you know, I'd like to learn about entrepreneurship from other women of color, but it's pretty hard to find that
here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely been a huge obstacle and a huge barrier for me. And honestly, I don't think I ever would have done it if it wasn't for the fact that I have experienced every workplace I've ever been in and every, you know, academic institution I've ever been in as like profoundly traumatic. Mm. Right. Like I just felt like I cannot, like, those spaces very literally make me feel like I'm gonna die. Like, they made me very unwell.
Right.
So it's been very, it was a necessity. I felt like the only shot I had at wellness was gonna be doing my own thing, entrepreneurship. Right. And it's so overwhelming, but honestly, it has been completely worth it because the work that I do on my own makes me feel so fulfilled and does support my wellness like no other thing I've ever done has. Yeah. You know, and it's taken me to a place of satisfaction in my life that I never have experienced before, you know.
Right.
And it feels so deeply right and exciting and all of those things. And it's not enough to make a living yet. Hopefully it will be one day. I still work at my serving job, which right. is really hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm really tired a lot of the time, but it just feels so good and so right that everything else is worth it, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But I also want to acknowledge that I have a huge amount of privilege. So I've had a level of support that most people don't have access to, and I don't know if I could have done it without that.
Yeah.
So there's still huge amounts of privilege.
Yeah. 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 No, I feel you. It sounds to me like you are in this place where you're able to like recreate and redefine the script of what work is for you.
Yeah.
And I think it's so fascinating that you're doing so work that gives you so much alignment and then work that does the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm curious because I work one full-time job and mm-hmm. you work like, I'm guessing you work more than full-time is kind of what your situation
probably,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. How do you find, what does balance look like for you? Because I think so many of us at work shift work or work like multiple jobs to make the thing happen, to get shit together. We don't have a good sense as to what does balance really mean or look like. And I'm wondering if that's something that you have had to think about or work through, or have you pulled back in some respects in some places to like give yourself some downtime?
Yeah, I have. And again, I'm lucky because I have support that not a lot of people have. So I've been able to have a little bit more balance than some people would, but it's still a struggle. It's kind of a constant challenge for me. I did drop a day at my serving job quite recently, and I'm feeling the kind of financial strain of that, but I had no days off ever, and it wasn't gonna be a good scene.
Right.
It's still something that I'm really working on. I think one idea from dance movement therapy is that you need kind of the opposite. So like if you're doing a lot of creative work, then you need to like take things in.
The yin and yang kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's kind of how I understand balance, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm still in process of trying to find, like, I go running. That's something that's like really helpful for me. Yeah, I'm still very much trying to find the balance though, because I definitely am tired a lot.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think happens for a lot of women of color, whether we're trying to make the entrepreneurship work or whether we're, you know, like your mom, how much she worked to support her family. Like mm-hmm. so many women of color, so much is asked for us and we're pulled in so many different directions.
Right.
And it's so hard to know where the limits are.
Absolutely.
And something that I've brought to my clients, and so I'm having to think about it myself because I say it to them and I got to listen to what I say too, is we have to think about sustainability. So right. not just like how far can you push yourself today, you know, and still mm-hmm. get up tomorrow. It's like, can you get up and keep working and doing what you want to do a year from now, 10 years from now, 40 years from now?
Right.
Because we need women of color
to be around for the next. Yeah.
Right.
Like, longevity is the thing. Yeah. We're not trying to do a sprint. It's a marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think for me recently, I've been thinking a lot more about the difference between meaningful work and work that's meaningful for me.
Hmm.
In my mind, meaningful work could be work for the greater good in general, right? Working in a nonprofit, the opposite of working for a big corporation that's only goal is to like get the shareholders very wealthy. Meaningful work, you know? I'm working in healthcare that's my work, right? It's inherently trying to support people and, you know, push towards the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
But does it inspire me? Is this a place where I experience alignment? Fuck no. It's just not, right? And I think once I started to dial into that, because I would oftentimes have these conversations with people, and it kind of stems back to this feeling or this phenomenon or the realities of capitalism, where we say this is a good job and this is a bad job. And so if you ever dare to say something to the effect of, oh, you know, I don't really, my job is, you know, it's okay, I can do it, it's fine, it's not really exciting, da, 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 da. The response oftentimes, especially if you're doing work that to other people seems like it is quote unquote important work or good work or meaningful work, is, oh, but you have a great job, like, why aren't you more happy? And I guess for myself, I've just started to pull away from trying to, one, find my sense of self in the work that I'm doing that's paid work, and two, start to silence the voices that try to negate or redirect my focus back on things that I already know aren't for me.
Right.
You know, like recognizing whatever feeling you have in your body that's telling you that something isn't right for you, it's probably not right for you.
Yeah.
Like, you know you better than you. Like, you know you better than anyone else. Sorry.
Yeah. Right? And you probably know yourself better than your conscious mind allows you to believe. A lot of times we override what we know.
Totally. Intuitively. Yeah. And I think so much of what we have, keep going back to, what do we have the capacity to actually change in workplaces that are fucking oppressive, right? One of the things is distinguishing between work that's meaningful for you and meaningful work. Another thing for me has been really focusing on that idea of blooming where you're planted.
Mm.
And I don't want to confuse that with, like, just be positive.
No, but what does it mean, blooming where you're planted?
It means, regardless of where you're at, being able to take in your surroundings and learn something that can help you next time.
Okay, this is something I really believe in, because I've been at my serving job for like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I love some of the people I work with. I hate this job. I hate it.
She really hates it. You actually need to see her fucking face right now.
There is so much that I hate it so much. Anyways, one of the ways that I've been able to get through 8 years, and especially when I was full time at this job for a long time.
Holy shit, for real?
Yeah, oh, for God. Years.
Yeah.
It's been about, for me, finding where I can grow.
Right.
And so part of that, because part of what I just really hate about it is the kind of the power dynamic of customer service and the ways people think it's okay to treat you and talk to you and having to just put on a smile and
take
be okay
it.
And take it.
Right.
And over the years, something I've really focused on has been how to deal with that level of stress and how to deal with that kind of energy without it just making me a miserable, awful person, which it did for a while.
Yeah.
And more recently then, it's been learning how to, in my own way, be more assertive or have more of an attitude in a way that it still works in the conflict, you know, and it's not like against the rules, or it's not gonna cause a conflict.
Sure.
But I feel like I can talk back in ways that work for me. And
yeah,
so finding those ways to grow has been how I have managed to keep going
and keep sane.
Yeah.
And keep where you're at, right? Yeah. Like, you've maintained this job, you haven't been fired, so
yes.
Yeah, yet. I think, but yeah, knocking on wood now, because like, we don't want that to happen. For myself, it's looked like being a lot more, taking more risks and having conversations with people who have influence over my career or over my job, and letting them know what I actually like versus what I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's also even been telling people about creative projects that I have nothing to do with work.
Mm.
Because then folks are able to understand the vastness of the things that I'm interested in or capable of doing.
Right.
And I don't know, like, for me, that ties into blooming where you're planted is just like digging your heels into the place and letting folks know who you really are.
Ooh, yeah.
And so many of us feel like we can't do that, but I do believe that there are some ways that we can, like you were saying, establishing what it means to teeter on those lines of having boundaries for yourself, but playing within the confines of what's appropriate to do at work, for example. And then showing up as much as you can as your full self, bringing your interests and the things that you're actually passionate about, and finding ways, if possible, to integrate them into the things that you're doing at work. It's not possible for all of us, but I think it's something that I've been actively trying to pin down recently.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's so important.
Yeah. And so I want to talk a little bit about our woman of color of the week.
Yes.
Because I love her. She's freaking awesome. And her name is Issa Rae.
Yes.
If you don't know, you should fucking know. She is a writer, director, producer, and web series creator. She first garnered attention for her work on the YouTube web series Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl in 2011. And now she's at the helm of the show Insecure on HBO, mm-hmm. which she writes, produces in, and stars in. And in my mind, she's a real life testament of what it looks like to create work that's meaningful for yourself. She actively invests within her own community and seems to have a strong sense of connectedness to where she came from and where she's going, and has spoken many times about the influence that Nipsey Hussle's had on her life, just being part of your community and then working within your community and not thinking that, oh, I need to go over to this place to like make it, or I need to go be this person to make it, but really harnessing what you have within and what you've been taught within your own community and within your own experiences to be the thing that guides you towards real personal fulfillment. She creates opportunities for others to learn and grow through internships and gigs within her production company, Issa Rae Productions. And then, getting really meta right now, within the show Insecure, she has done an amazing job of exploring the notions of work, what it means and looks like to be unsatisfied in a job as a Black woman, in a job that tokenizes you, in a job that appropriates or picks up only parts of your culture and throws it right back at you, in a job that you can only be a part of yourself and not your full self. And I love that. I think she plays around with images of all ranges of Black women in work, from Molly's job as a lawyer mm-hmm. and her feelings of not actually being given the same opportunities, literally not getting paid as much as her white counterparts, and exploring that, to Natasha's being, you know, some form of person who handles money, an accountant, and gets her reparations by not getting Kelly. Her white.
But she has a podcast.
Right,
too.
Natasha Kelly. Yeah. And she has a podcast too. Right, exactly. But all that is to say, I think Issa does a really amazing job of creating really relatable stories that we can all see ourselves in, with respect to following what's passionate for you, recognizing when the thing that lights your fire isn't the thing that you're doing right now, and then pursuing it. I won't give any spoilers away for folks who haven't watched like season 3 of Insecure, but I will say I just find the representations and the talking about women, Black women at work, is something that's like, I don't know if a lot of mainstream media ever gets there to tease that out.
Yeah, it's been so cool seeing her do that on her shows. And I just also have really appreciated hearing her talk about all of these things. And so I also saw her on a panel with Lena Waithe and some other women as well. And Lena was actually saying that Issa was asking her, like, are you taking breaks? And Lena's like, not really. And she's like, you got to take breaks. Like, you got to rest. You got to take care of yourself. And I think, again, especially for Black women, it's so important to talk about that aspect of work too, like that you need to rest also.
Yeah, inherently. Yeah. Like, and I find that to be so refreshing. I think so many of us, Black women, women of color, Indigenous women, feel like we have to like toil. And for so many of us, we really do have to. But it's that ability to like snatch whatever joy we can and have and pin it down and
prioritize,
own it, and prioritize
as
ourselves as much as we can. Absolutely. Yeah. That I think is what we all really need to be leaning into.
We're going to reclaim that. Remix it.
I'm done.